You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
One of the many things that I love about Starset and what they're doing is that it seems like, first of all, their lyrics are super clean. You can literally bring your kids to the shows. You know, they're like super clean. They're very deep. And there's a lot of fans that come up to Destin. Like, I've seen it so many times. They come up to Destin and they're like, man, thank you so much for saving my life. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, how many lives words can save.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of 2020. I'm Siobhan Cronin here, as always, with Ben and Corey. We just want to remind you, please go and subscribe at 2020-D.com. Check out the YouTube cast. Always tune into the video. So many great details you're missing out
every
on.
Every time you subscribe, we get so happy and we dance.
It's like an endorphin rush. Like, you know, like how Facebook and Instagram doesn't matter anymore, but you do the YouTube. We're so close to monetizing. We could make that $3.16. It's like the carrot, but all we need is like 8 more subscribers. So just tell your friends on the bus. Do it.
Yes, well, yeah, I mean, listen, we've broken 100 episodes where we have so many other great guests lined up. So you don't want to miss out for sure. But before I get into
this,
that,
this guest is good. This guest is great. She's maybe one of the best guests we've ever had. In fact, she's so good, I can't even afford her at my party.
So this is Zuzana Part 2, Z from Starset, my bandmate, cellist extraordinaire.
Las Vegas wedding planner to the stars.
Yeah, but all you Starset fans that listen, all 12 of you, you will like this episode a lot. There's a lot of Starset talk, a lot of tour talk, all the fun things.
Yeah, a lot of behind the scenes. It was fun to talk about it.
Yeah, and also I think it, you know, definitely a different perspective on touring in general. So anyone that doesn't even know or care about Starset, you'll also enjoy it. It's interesting.
So here
stuff
we go.
All
and
around.
You really, I think she really brings out again how important like the dynamics of someone like a Boccherini is to bring to a rock band as a cellist, and it's very interesting to see it from the point of view of somebody again with a Boccherini like attention to detail for dynamics.
All right, and before you scare everyone off, we're gonna dive right into Part 2 with Zuzana right here in 2020.
With the cement, subscribe.
Welcome to 2020. My name is Corey Pazza here, as always, with Benny Goodman and Siobhan Cronin. What's going on, guys?
Hey, happy to be back here for Part 2.
Yeah, with our vices.
With our vices.
Yeah, right?
We barely made it through one episode before having to get the drinks going.
Well, I love Zuzana so earnestly looked at us and she's like, wait, are we allowed to like drink on this thing? We're like, oh yeah, you should totally drink. It makes
apparently
things way
easier.
Apparently,
I didn't give a good enough disclaimer, but I'm going to let Corey introduce our guest for anyone who hasn't listened to Part 1 yet.
Who's been trying to cheers us for a while now. So, Zuzana, welcome back. Cellist of Starset, pop strings, epic cellist who learned how to stand up and play and look badass, which
if you like the Raiders, you hear her. She plays at the house band at the Raiders for 65,000 people. You might know them. They play football. I don't know.
It sounds kind of like New York, Boston, maybe. I don't even know what that is.
I just feel like if you like sports, you have some sort of annoying towny accent. So that's like my generic annoying towny accent.
All right. Well, moving on, plowing ahead. If you want to hear about her story, kind of getting into music and coming to America and all those fun trials and tribulations, go back, check out Part 1. But in Part 2, I want to hear about your experience touring with our favorite, second favorite band on this podcast, Starset. First being our sponsor, Lost Symphony.
Which, by the way, it's a badass. I admire everything you guys do. It's such a badass. Yeah.
Thank
you.
I think I speak for all of us, but for me too, that if we do any more Lost Symphony, which some people talked about, but like this is also like a boat. So it's like, do you want to go boating again? Well, it depends if we can pay off the fuel. But like if we do go boating again in the Lost Symphony universe, I would hope it would be with you because you are excellent. Because for everyone that's listening, I'm working with this crazy dude from Mexico named Hector Hellion. And I put Mariko. and Susanna and Siobhan together on the same track. And let me tell you, it's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters. These three women are all savants, and it makes me feel like I'm a goddamn Nobel Prize winning production guy just to make it balanced and sound good because they're so good.
Oh, that's a story in itself.
That's another cocktail hour.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start. Yeah, I'll start with a funny story. Speaking of joining Starset and being new, and then Z, you can pick it up with your experience. But you know, the funny thing always when a band changes members is like, okay, how is this going to like upset the apple cart? So you, I'm sure you can talk about like what you were anticipating with me or with the band members. But of course, you know, we've all met Mariko. If you haven't listened to the podcast we did with her, go back and listen. But you know, very sweet. We got like a good chemistry going. And then when she was leaving, I was like, oh my god, damn. I was like, what if this girl is a bitch? What if she's mean? And then I looked. I'm like, she's so pretty. She's from Vegas. I'm like, this is not going to be good. And then she showed up and she was like, Z was the nicest person. I remember when we picked you up at the airport, you were like right into business. Like we are getting you from the airport and going directly to a festival, like never played with us before. And she's just like super chatty, like asking all these questions, like so friendly, probably hasn't slept at all. I'm like, this is amazing. The level of relief I felt, I was like, thank God. I was like, because as we mentioned in the prior episode, it's, yeah, it's totally a crapshoot if you're going to get a completely insane string player that will ruin your life.
Is it like going to the dog show and the dogs are so elitist they don't even smell each other's bums? They're just like, eh. And then, but when you see that they're playing with each other, it doesn't matter if it's a German Shepherd or if it's a poodle. They're just getting along like doggies.
Any musician that's kind of in the hired gun, you know, jumping around project to project, there is a kind of a mandatory temperament that you have to have, otherwise you wouldn't be getting those calls. I mean, in my experience, like, have you guys run into someone who's, I guess they would have to be so amazing that people would look past it, but have you encountered someone that, like, you know, you just got to on a gig and you're like, why is this person here?
I think it's Starset, we're kind of lucky with that. Like, I feel like everybody is like super nice, you know? I mean, we have good days and bad days, of course, you know, after being on a tour for like 6 weeks, you know, you want to kill each other, you know, but it's just kind of like normal, you know, you're touring.
Is it Adam first? Do you want to kill Adam first? It's always the drummer dude. Cause he's like the troublemaker of the band. I love Adam, but like, I feel like Adam is so much fun. But then like, you just wake up the next day, you're like, Adam.
No, I think we are all pretty much good people.
Yeah, no, we are. I mean, but I agree with you. Like, in some ways, I think you're right, Corey. Generally, I would say across the board, most people that I've met in the high-end gigs that are doing it full-time have a great temperament, because you're not going to get there if you don't. But, you know, again, there's always situations where it's like, oh, crap, we need somebody that's available for 2 straight months and we need them 2 weeks from now. Right. So sometimes that limits your pool, you know, and there is always that risk.
You're held hostage by your employees.
Right. Yeah. There is that risk. And I, you know, Z and I both also have our own businesses where we hire people and, you know, string players and other musicians. And that's something you encounter all the time where it's like, yeah, ideally you're going to get someone on the top tier that has all of the things, you check all the boxes. But there's always that risk where it's like, we might have asked somebody that's coming on tour with us for 2 months that is going to turn out to be a pain in the ass on week
that's
two.
True. Right. Minute stuff can definitely get funky. And that happens. It happens, I think, at every level, because there's, you know, if you're in any sort of music scene at whatever level, there's always going to be someone either sending emails or texting or posting on social like, I need someone tomorrow. I don't care if you have 8 fingers, like it does, just show up, you know.
Oh, yeah. Totally have been there. Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, like when I joined the band, I actually got lucky because I had a couple months of preparation. And then Mariko was amazing. Like, she wrote all the charts for those first 2 albums that they already had. And then the Visions, I kind of had to like write my own charts for that. But it was a big, big help that she wrote all the charts for the first 2. So all I had to do was just listen to music and memorize it, you know? And then I was shitting my pants before I went to Columbus for the first time. And I remember they picked me up at the airport and we went straight to Dustin's bar, right?
Right.
Salem, I think. And there was that was my first performance at Salem, which was kind of like a free-for-all because like you couldn't hear anything, you know? So it was, yeah.
It was an unusual situation, yeah.
Yeah, it was unusual. And even Dustin was like, yeah, you had like a pretty good, like the first, first performance because nobody could hear anything, you know? It was it was, yeah. And then we had three festivals, I think. But I remember when they picked me up at the airport, right? I had my flight case, right? And Brock was like, well, don't you want to jam in the car? Like, don't you want to take the cello out of the flight case, you know? So I was like, all right, I guess we are practicing in the bus, you know? So I'm like shitting my pants even more because now I'm going to play in front of these guys on the freaking bus, you know? Like, I was like, so chill. We end up like not playing, but we're just discussing like the songs and like the keys and whatever with Siobhan, you know?
Because Brock is like, wait, why does it take me 3 months to jam this stuff? And these string players just fly in here and they play it the first time.
Because like, they can read.
That's true. That, yeah. I mean, I'll agree. That is a huge like plus getting the charts, yeah. Because that's another thing in the rock world. It's like most of the time compared to classical, it's like, unless you're a studio player, it's like, oh yeah, here's the stems. Just learn them.
When we did Lost Symphony, my brother was originally helping doing a lot of the arrangements, but like we just had normal MIDI. So Brian's writing these parts. You're like, you can't play this on any kind of normal string instruments. This is like four string instruments that you have at once. And like, mm-hmm. Brian didn't get it. He's like, you're using the wrong staff. I am. How do you, and like, you had to sit there and like basically reverse engineer like what my brother was trying to do. And like with the notes he kind of wrote and like that kind of do that. And it's like amazing, yeah. To have someone again, like Mariko, to sit there and just go, this is what he really wants. And then for you to go and hear the songs and then it's all written in front of you. And then Brock goes, well, how'd you get it? It's because you were born to play classical music, which I say is like basically channeling Beethoven or channeling Chopin, because they're so particular down to the pianissimo, down to like, you know, the way it's played. Whereas as a rock musician, you just hear Hendrix and you just play it how you fucking feel it. So like you're used to playing exactly a certain way and being told what to do, whereas like Brock's just like, well, I guess I'm just gonna play this and it took me a long time to fit in with this.
Brock's just like, how low can I tune this string? I gotta get this lower. Right.
This is actually E. This is he told me he was in drop E. I'm like, isn't that the normal tuning? Wait, oh, you're playing bass. You're just playing bass, man.
Yeah, Brock's most recent story was like,
sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, you know, they started rehearsing a little bit for the upcoming tour, and he's like, I spent all this time learning the new songs, and then I show up, and we just rehearsed one of the old songs in a different key, and I didn't, and he was, like, all messed up, and it's like, oh, damn, he spent all this time practicing only to play the one thing he wasn't prepared to play.
Of course, like, that's Adam Hannah every week.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the one thing that I think that as a gigging musician who plays with cover bands, and not only that, but multiple cover bands, is learning how to just go. Like, all right, this is, yeah. This artist plays in this key, and half the time it's like, oh, this artist doesn't play that chord that's in the song. They use this chord, and you don't get it the first chorus, but the second time you got to be like, all right, remember what I'm doing this time. You know, it's a skill set that I think I never wanted to have, but I've developed quite well over the past few years.
Well, I saw Corey. I've never realized how important having a capo was until I saw Corey play live. And then, like, because Adam Hanna not only plays in weird tunings, but then he's like, okay, and I'll see him go like whisper to Corey. I'm like, this is not good. And he'll be like, hey, want to do that thing we haven't done in forever this certain way, and then mash this together, and we're gonna do it in a different key. And I can just see Corey like taking his capo and like just moving it to like where he thinks it's supposed to be, and just going, fuck it, I hope this works. And then he's like a kamikaze playing.
I don't use capos. I look at Adam's capo to see what key we're playing in, because he doesn't tell me.
Yeah.
And then I play bar chords.
Well, we can definitely relate to that, especially doing some of the acoustic stuff, as you know, the tour we did recently is like, yeah, as a string player, there's no capo. It's like, if the singer's feeling it in a different key, it's like, all right, transpose in your head right now.
Yeah.
And that's right. It sounds easy, but it's hard.
Siobhan is so much better with this. She can like change the key like this. But I mean, I'm getting better with that. But when I started with
you're great with it.
I was freaking out when it was like, oh, let's go. Helps it down. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. Sometimes that helps it down for us is like, okay, now you're gonna have like five flats, six flats, you know, so forget about open strings. Don't even think about it, you know. And but sometimes when he changes the key, it's like, oh, this is nice, we can use the open string, how it feels, you know. But we have to know those keys.
Yeah. And it's funny, that's kind of like a nice example, you know, talking about the way Brock approaches the songs, where he's got to sit there and he's got to rehearse, he's got to listen, he's got to get everything down exactly. You guys have to come in and be kind of prepared for anything, because you're going to be playing those songs, for the tour, but you know, the tour gets back and the next weekend you might be playing these completely different songs,
right?
You know, every day. So the mentality and like of you know, musicians jumping from project to project, even if you're doing a long tour, your mind's always going to be having stuff going on in the back of your head. Whereas, you know, Brock's going to learn what, an hour set? Come on.
And the crazy part is you see you girls live, and the truth is that you sound unfucking believable. So to think the fact that you guys are like, have your feet to the fire and you still sound that good, like, is unbelievable. Because I know how hard it is being, you know, like watching a guy like Brock. I feel more cathartically for him because, like, I've been more in his position going, okay, how do I make this work? Versus you girls are just owning it. I'm like, oh, they know what they're doing. And, like, meanwhile, you're like, we're freaking out, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think with the guitar and the bass, there's a lot more of the sort of advanced preparation of building the tones and using the Kemper and a lot of that, like, sort of technical stuff, like what guitar tunings am I going to have? And that's like Brock's whole brain for a month up until
that's
tour.
True.
Like,
that's one thing that's especially with Starset, where everything's, you know, you're not just learning the chord progression. You got to have the effects switching and everything. And if you're behind on that, it's far more noticeable than maybe a quick little bad note that you can slide
into. But doesn't
into.
Dustin do it for you? I feel like Dustin does that with the lights, doesn't he? Like, I feel like he would just be like, you're going to play your Kemper. We're not going to have any sound guy. Because he actually said on our show, like, I'm sorry if you have a problem with that. I'm like, no, that's genius. Get rid of the sound guy. That guy's usually an asshole. And get rid of that. And we now have learned that you could change people's effects for them without having a guy backstage through DMX 512 protocol.
They're not getting rid of the sound guy. It wasn't sound guy. It was guitar tech.
Guitar tech. Yes.
Yeah. No,
so,
well,
yeah, sorry.
I think, but yeah, you, I mean, Brock takes...
You could have,
I mean,
the lights do it.
In terms of building the tones, I mean, you know, Dustin conceptualizes everything in terms of the record, but, you know, then it's up to Brock and Ron and everybody to kind of, you know, bring it to the live stage as best as possible. And I mean, that's another thing I learned from guitar players is like the idea when you're dealing with an amplified instrument of building a tone or like an electric instrument is so different. You know, acoustic, we play, it's all like, okay, what is your contact point on the string? And are you playing with this type of bow stroke? Whereas when you play with electric instruments, you're trying to achieve like a certain amplified tone. There's like all these parameters that I've never thought of in my life.
Kind of like your technique changes a little bit too, because when you're amplified, you actually hear everything on it. Every little scratch, every little touch, every little, you know what I mean? Like change, like it's so different. It's like so much more, I don't know, exposed, I guess. Because it's so amplified, you know? So yeah, it's definitely different. But yeah, I agree with Siobhan. Like when you know, when you listen to the record on the Starset and then you have to bring it to the live version, you know, like I feel like, yeah, Brock has definitely way more work to do when it comes to that part of the work, you know?
So is it kind of like, you know, Casals, like when he figured out how to like make his left hand more limber to do the free bowing thing? Cause like, I feel like that's what it is. Like you don't realize how many parameters there is until you get to that Kemper, but it's the same thing as a cellist that like, if you actually stretch your hand and then you free bow it, you could do so much crazier shit. Ask Mariko.
What's free bowing?
I don't know what you're talking about. What is free bowing? This is something never heard of.
Freer bowing.
Oh, he's reading this.
He's secretly got a teleprompter up here with all of his like intelligent.
Dude, you just blew up your spot. All those things you've ever said on every episode.
No, that's not true. The funny part is I just got this fucking monitor, but yeah, no, I actually written this down. I had written it down earlier.
All of Ben's like, useless trivia.
I want it. No, I read it. But listen, I pre-prepared. I wrote notes. I didn't read freer. It looked like freer bowling. Whatever
well,
that
the
means.
The point is, yeah, you have to through experience, you have to have access to tapping into different techniques on the spot, depending on the situation you're in. Which, as like a hired gun, it's great. You know, you get a lot of experience doing that. Where it's like, okay, today you might get one sound check in a rehearsal, and you have to figure out how to blend in with this band, or you know how to alter the way you're playing with the bow so that it's not. You know, like adjusting your sound to fit in with the texture of what's going on around you, and that can be difficult. You know.
Right.
So, and for us, like with Starset, a lot of it on our side of the strings is kind of choosing what elements to highlight because it is very orchestral. It is, you know, there's one single violin and cello playing live, but I mean, the actual stems are very, very dense in a lot of cases.
So how do you guys go about deciding what part to bring forward in that?
Oh, so I'll start. Sure. So when I wrote charts for the divisions, the album, the last album before this last one that is going to come out, I took from the stems all the cello parts. So I wrote cello parts, right? And that's what I was playing. But the thing is, like, the cello blends a lot with the guitar sound, you know, and especially like the big shows, live shows. And it's, you can't really hear it a lot of times unless the sound guy is constantly adjusting, you know, stuff. So this time around, there's so many parts to choose from. Like, there's like, what was it, like maybe like a 3-4 violin parts? I mean, probably like 2-3 violin parts and then viola part and the cello parts. And then actually I hear bass parts, like upright bass parts in the stems a lot. So what I did, I was actually going from like the second violin part to the viola part to the cello part, depending on like what point the song, like, because sometimes the cello part is important in the song. So I don't know if you noticed, Siobhan, on the charts that I send you, like, it's kind of like that. You know? So you can actually like hear me. Hopefully it's going to work.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can tell I learned from Corey is always put a high pass filter on everything and only leave the things that you're actually supposed to hear coming out the bass. Because I've learned that if you just cut off all those frequencies, you're not competing with anything.
I don't think most cellos have a high pass filter, but...
Yeah. No, no, but I'm saying the sound guy, just make this cut everything off and then just make sure that like you put like a, so what I did in the song, because I did a song with cello, I just put like different, like a telephone filter on one of them and it just kind of like raised her completely above the mix in a way where you could just hear, because she was like, I can't hear myself. I'm like, that's important. And then Siobhan then calls me afterwards after she makes me pain through figuring out all of her genius takes that don't go together, how I can make it all work together. And then she goes, it sounds a little bit soft. I'm like, fuck you. I made you soft because you're supposed to be a texture. But I'd like to be more upfront. So then I put it all together and made it work.
It sounds so soft.
That's how I read her texts to myself.
Oh my gosh. But coming back to the star set stuff though, you know, you have to always think about what is supposed to be the audience experience, right? So people are used to listening to the album and then they come to the show wanting to basically hear some version of the album that's close to the things that they relate to. So, you know, the hooks are important. If it's a synth thing that we want to try and cover live, like there are a lot of cases where maybe the string part is really just complimentary and it's not really important. So, you know, it's more important to highlight, you know, the hook or the important element that people are going to relate to emotionally. So yeah, there is some decision, and that's what a lot of the rehearsal is for, is figuring out in the pre-pro, you know, for tour, what we're going to do and what's effective. And
then of course, like when we do the acoustic versions, then it changes, you know.
Oh yeah, I think we cover probably a lot more of the actual like songs, not just the string parts, like in the acoustic versions, because we have to cover all the electronic elements that aren't there in the acoustic versions, right?
Somebody's gonna pick up the slack, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot more naked.
Yeah. What did you guys think about the acoustic tour? Like, how did that compare to your full stage production?
I loved it. I loved it. I was it was actually really nice to hear everything, you know, because it's, like I said, a lot of times you can't hear the string. I mean, you hear the strings, but you can't hear them like specifically, you know? Like during this acoustic tour, we go like, I really enjoyed it. I hope we can do more of these, because it was a nice experience for me.
I agree. And I think getting feedback from people in the audience, you know, we get so immersed in our own heads of like, oh, like, how's our tone and like intonation and stuff. And then you talk to people and you discover what is it that is important to them. And a lot of people, like we've said in the last episode, hear with their eyes. It's like some people may not connect that the violin is playing that part until they see it up close. They're like, oh, that thing that I've been hearing is the violin, you know? Right. And so, yeah, I think it was really cool to like realize that actually how people are experiencing it is different from how we experience it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Your crazy arpeggio and it has the end at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I would cover
that's actually a synth part as well, like in the record song.
Yeah, so in the live version of It Has Begun, there's like a crazy like arpeggiator that's on a synth. Yeah. But in the acoustic version, I was covering that because we didn't have the synth part. And I, Ryan, our sound guy, like, didn't even realize I was playing that until I told him. I'm like, crank me up there, man, because people want to hear that part. Because that's like the hook of that section. Everyone wants to hear the crazy arpeggiator.
And so he started doing that, like, during this acoustic tour. And people
when he did it for the first time in Atlanta, people literally gave us, like, a standing ovation. They were insane. They were like, oh, my God, that was amazing. I'm like, that's all because you turned up the violin at the end of It Has Begun.
See, well, see, Ben, I mean, Siobhan yells at all engineers to turn her up, so don't feel bad. I get it too.
No.
Well, I mean, I gotta tell you, it's funny that Z says that, like, she's like, it's the first time I can hear myself. And I just think of, like, George Orwell, that some people, that everybody's created equal, but some people are more equal than others. Because when I saw them, I watched the sound check, and Dustin and Ron definitely did not seem to think that the sound was very good. So I'm wondering to myself, are you guys normally just in the dark and it's mostly just vocals and all these things? Because it's now naked. So, like, from a sound perspective, it was interesting to hear all the violins and all the strings, because it also shows how good you are. And it also shows that people, you're right, they are watching you with their eyes. So where you're in an orchestra, they're not watching with their eyes. They're, like, listening, like, is she fucking it up? You guys, like, literally, like, barely have to do anything. Like, just play the note, like, kind of right, and people would, like, forgive you for everything as long as you look like a space person.
I don't know that that's the case, but no, I mean, not to jump in first, but I'll say, you know, playing a live show on a big stage where it's amplified and you're wearing in-ears is a completely different experience than playing acoustically, right? I mean, to me, you know, even though I love playing rock music, I don't love using in-ear monitors. I don't necessarily like having to compete with guitars in terms of hearing stuff. It's always a lot harder for me to hear stuff well with the tone that I like to hear it on in the big stage show. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's always easier for me when it's an acoustic setting. It's nicer. I feel like I have more control. So that's just my perspective. I don't know about you, Z.
Yeah. I feel the same way. Yeah. It's always harder. And, like, you know, even though we do have our own mixes, we have iPads, we have, like, apps on our iPads, and then you can adjust, you know, your mix. It's still, in general, I'm not really crazy about in-ears, using the in-ears, you know, because you kind of feel like you're a little bit out.
Isolated.
You know, but it's...
Do you guys have an ambient mic on stage that you can mix in?
I don't think so, actually. I mean, sometimes I have, like, the vocal mics, but it's not...
You guys should have... I mean, this is common. It's not anything groundbreaking, but you should have just toss a mic on stage or in front of the stage to get crowd noise or anything so you don't feel like you're so... separated. Like, that's a pretty common thing for people. Some people get freaked out with in-ears. They feel like
believe me, Corey, I never feel alone in my head.
I think you're right, though, because it's funny, because our perception of, like, an audience energy, especially at, like, big festivals, like some of them that we played recent, were like, oh, these people weren't into it at all.
Yeah.
And then, like, somebody that was one of the techs or the sound guy is like, no, people were crazy and they were doing all this stuff. Yeah. And we're like, wow, we had a totally different experience because we're just so
toss
separated.
An ambient mic on stage just for the in-ear mixes so you feel like you're actually on stage with people.
Good tip.
Well, that's the other thing, is that also shows that you girls know how to play blind, because when you play thinking that, like, because the best players in my mind go up there thinking, I'm not going to hear myself, I'm going to suck. In fact, we played a show with Ollie Herbert, may he rest in peace, where they actually turned the mic away from his amp. So we're just like, oh, well, at least they're hearing it out there. And they didn't even fucking hear it out there because it was turned the wrong way. But you played perfectly, I'm sure. So everyone's like, wow, they're fucking loving it out there. And meanwhile, on stage, you're like smiling. You're like, why are we playing this bullshit?
I mean, it's always, it's one of those things where, like, I'm sure you do this too, Z. It's like, I have to find videos after the show. I'm like, how did that actually sound? You know, because, like, what you hear in your ears, especially, like, if you're using a pickup on an acoustic instrument, like, the tone isn't always great, you know, without the effect on it. And it's hard to hear the overtones for intonation and stuff like that. So you're always like, well, I think I played well, but who knows?
Right. Even though we use both, like, these pickup and microphones, but, you know, sometimes the venues are not as big where you can really use.
You have to pull more from the DI.
So you have to do the DI. Especially because of, like, all the drums nonsense, you know, going on.
I'm surprised that Dustin hasn't built boxes around you just for COVID reasons so that you guys could be, like, you know, totally in your own sound box where really you hear nothing and it's all perfect. So every night he can record you. So when he's like, we want to do another record, he's like, it's already done. Well, I've already cataloged all of your sounds, every note. I had you play this song, and now it's all in my keyboard. I'm going to Nashville, and I'm making another record. Goodbye.
I don't know if you saw that iteration, though, but there was a period before Z's time where we were, I think it was even before Mariko, where we were in boxes, where I had my own... like Adam was in his cube that was the automatic frosting cube that Dustin talked about when he was on the episode. And all three, yeah, both the cello and the violin and Adam had that. And so it was like three cubes where the projection that would frost and the projections would show up. And that's
which
where
is
all the
a great,
spinal-
great story, by the way, that Dustin told on 2020. So just want to reach out. Anyone that's listening or watching that's a Starset fan that's watching or listening because we're talking Starset stuff, make sure you go back because we've talked a lot of Starset on 2020 here.
Brock, too, and Adam?
Yeah. Yeah. So 2020-D.com.
Ron, you're on notice.
Go to the archive page and check out all the Starset stuff we've talked about. The frosted Adam cube is one of my favorites. So.
It's a good story. A lot of Spinal Tap moments there with weird technological snafus.
Oh, I just love that Steve Wood thought he was a guitarist for so long. He's like, so what kind of guitar do you play? And he's like, well, I actually had to sell strawberries I picked in the fields to be able to buy
only
my first
Steve
crappy
Wood can make that joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so unbelievable. Like the fact that like, oh, man, you have to go back and watch it, Z. It's literally, like, if you go back and watch it, it's so surreal. Watch, like, the two most unlikely, the unlikeliest people in the world to be talking to each other. It's hilarious.
So check it out. Steve Wood and Dustin Bates on 2020.
I love them both so much.
Yeah.
That was when we were on a tour, right?
That was when we were on the bus. So I had asked Dustin to do episodes before, but then... You know, all of a sudden he walked back and I was like, oh, you should come say hi. And then it turned into him doing a whole episode with like a different guest that we had. And I was like, all right, well, I just sat next to him. So, I mean, no one saw me on the episode, but I was literally sitting next to him, like baking in the heat of the back lounge because we have to turn the AC off, you know, because it's so loud. It's like, so I had to turn it off so that he could do the episode. And I'm sitting like caressing Ernie, the dog. Like trying to make sure that he doesn't jump over and knock the microphone
out. Right, right. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that was when we were on the acoustic tour.
Come out after to the front lounge.
Speaking of tour, do you guys have any good tour stories you can share? So any adventures that have happened recently?
Oh my god, Dowling.
Do you have any good stories? I'm curious to hear, like, from your perspective. I feel like I've told some before on previous episodes, but.
I don't think I have like any crazy.
Well,
all right.
Why do you think that doesn't be anything crazy? What was your favorite, you know, stop on any tour? Like, what was any like memorable moment that you came across to, or like a place you visited? Where you're like, oh, I didn't expect this, you know, anything like that.
I really loved Paris when we were in Europe, and I think it was a great show. And then also when we were in. I don't remember if there was in Germany, one of the Germany cities. I remember that moment when people were just going absolutely nuts. And next thing you know, Dustin is like in the audience and they're like, I don't know how you call those things. Then he's like,
oh, crowd surfing. Saying, I feel like that was Amsterdam. I don't know, but I remember that. Yeah, I don't know.
But one of the many things that I love about Starset and what they're doing is that it seems like, first of all, their lyrics are super clean. You can literally bring your kids to the shows, you know, they're like super clean, they're very deep, and there's a lot of fans that come up to Dustin, like I've seen it so many times, they come up to Dustin and they're like, man, thank you so much for saving my life. Like it's unbelievable, like how many lives warts can save, you know. That's one of the things that it's a lot of I've seen it like so many times here and even in Europe.
I'll agree. It's pretty incredible to be overseas or in places where a lot of people don't even speak English, like, you know, Russia, where you do the VIP and you can't necessarily hold a conversation, but everyone knows every single lyric. And you can tell the songs that are like super heavy hitting for people in different areas. And I've experienced that too. People that have said that to me. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I could say something because I didn't even write the lyrics. But that's incredible to me to observe that, right? That it really is like very moving and yeah, life-saving for some people. We get like pretty immersed in the technicalities of music, and I think it's a good thing to come back to is like music mm-hmm. is an emotional experience, you know, and there should be joy and there should be like something.
You're arrangers. You guys are arranging. You just said it. So like people that don't understand, because I'm listening to you and I understand this because of Lost Symphony, and certainly Corey understands it as well, but like to be able to go from a viola part to a violin part to a double bass part to a cello part and like back and forth and doing all that sort of stuff and then going from a texture to a lead instrument to having a different tone, like people don't understand how complex that is. And I bet you it's, I mean, Dustin probably appreciates it, but he probably pays you to not understand it completely because he'll be like, just make it work. And like the job that you're supposed to do is you're supposed to arrange eight cello parts or eight string parts and make that you, or even possibly a keyboard part that's gone rogue that like no one's going to be able to arpeggiate, and everyone's like all of a sudden like this horse can go fast. So like that's the thing, like, and I don't think you're appreciated for that. I want people to understand that that's a really hard thing, especially considering you do it in borderline real time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's something that's worth noting is like that's part of the job description of being like what we do is being able to like jump into any scenario and like
the Great White Buffalo
take complete charge. And I think that's something why Starset works in a lot of ways. Everybody is like ultimately very responsible for their own corner of whatever right. it is that they're doing, you know, and the ability to trust that that person, that's what the violinist or the cellist or the tour manager, whatever it is, to be completely reliable and responsible for everything that they do that's in their jurisdiction, you know, that's like essential to the functionality of any group or any band. You know, if you have to micromanage someone or check in to make sure that they're like, you right. know, putting in the right amount of
check in.
And care.
I saw what you did there. Ah!
Another Queen's Gambit reference. Okay.
No, I was saying like Czech Republic, like
oh,
she's Slovakian.
I was thinking, like, checkmate.
Oh, well, that'd be
so
funny,
many,
too.
So
guess
many
what?
References.
When you did put, when you did play so the Queen's Gambit with her, you'd be a checkmate.
Like, made yeah. from Czech.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That. Sure. So.
But going back to, like, the string parts and, like, the, you know, like, what Dustin, like, I feel like Dustin is pretty much gives us, like a free...
carte blanche,
free reign, yeah,
yeah.
Carte blanche.
Unless he feels that like, oh, this is not comfortable, then he will say something. But most of the time, he's like fine, it, you know,
yeah.
whatever.
No, I mean, you're right. It's like the rare occasion. Like I remember one time I was playing a piano part. He's like, that's not the part. Like I picked
oh,
like
one
the
time I was playing actually a cello part, and he was like, no, don't play there.
Yeah. It's rare, but when it happens, you're like, oh shit, okay. And like every time I play that part now, I think about that one like 5 second moment in rehearsal where I'm like, this is the part.
But that's good because, okay, so one thing I have to say about Siobhan and working with her for so long is that she is such a consummate classical player that when you ask, so I'll give you an idea, Corey, you'll appreciate this. So we did this song, Mariko plays first.
You're getting
right?
further from the
progression. No, I want to understand the dynamic, yes. the dynamics of these of the players. And she plays this over Hector Hellion, which is this crazy bass part with, and that's what it is, with unbelievable drums. And she plays this whimsical, crazy, over the top, absolutely outrageous cello part. And you're like, okay, this is a cello song now. And Susanna, who I had asked first to play on it, was like, I'll do something now. I'm like, what could she possibly do? And then she writes the most amazing counterpart. I'm like, holy fucking shit. Just sends me one track. I'm like, that's all I needed. And all she complained about was one time I bounced it. It wasn't in time because I didn't line it up right. And fair. And then the second time it wasn't loud enough. And okay. So I fixed both those things. But Siobhan... I just threw all of her shit in because it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm already like halfway into my Klonopin in my joint. And I'm like, this is going to be fine because it's Siobhan. Oh, it's not. Because they were all like 6 separate ideas that were great by themselves. But together, they every once in a while matched up. And there was like a moment where it was like, oh, we're all together. And then it was just like, I'm going to go down a different choose your own adventure. And maybe I'll do this. And like, she couldn't make up her mind. And then she sent me 18 mic tracks. 18. I'm like, you couldn't have picked the one you liked the most? She's like, but I don't know if you want to DM. I'm like, so I'm trying to bust them at first. And then I'm like, fuck this. I'm choosing one. And then I say, I'm using the AKG. And she says, no, I think the ribbon sounds better. I'm like, then just plug that one in.
This is why every Lost Symphony song has a string project where I mix all the strings in hundreds of tracks. And then I bring them in. I bring them into the actual songs, you know, session, and then they're all just down to two tracks.
Right, but this like demonstrates the difference between, like, you know, sending stuff to Corey and sending stuff to Ben. Corey's like, okay, thank you for your string tracks. And then Ben is like, no. He's like, it's all wrong. He's like, you need to be decisive and pick the microphone you want and send me one track. And he's like yelling at me. But I mean, he's right. This is like, and I'm sure you'll relate to this.
Because you're like, so totally good. Susanna, she did that. She sent me one track and it was perfect.
And
so if I could refute anything, I can't. Because I was like, wow, she listened to the song. And here's the thing too. You are the last on the song. There's no excuse for you to be fucking all over the place. You're the last one. There's nothing else. So if it sounds weird to you, it sounds weird to me too.
Well, listen, that's an art in itself. It's hard. I think it's very hard to arrange and to write something that is like, and like I say, it's like if I'm given a blank slate to write a song, it's like I will overcomplicate it to the ninth degree, right? Like I'm amazed.
But if
by
you're
people
with me, if we wake up and we drink some coffee and I just go in there, give me a third, give me a, in real time, you'll read my mind. You'll know exactly what harmony to do and you'll get a whole fucking song done in like an hour, like with ideas and like locking with guitar parts that are completely ridiculous with all this crazy feel. And it's because you're just being told what to do. You need someone to conduct you.
This is a recurrent theme of the show, Z, that we've talked about in other episodes. The importance of a producer having a team of people that, you know, you have complementary skills, right? So my weakness is being completely indecisive. I'm like, and of course, being married to Brock
staggeringly
Richards,
indecisive.
Like, he's like, you have to have like a million backup plans. It's like you need to, your tone is the most important. You need to have five mic choices and all this stuff, and you need to mix the mics together. And it's this whole like thing, which I understand, to each his own. But yeah, it's I think it's very hard for me to be decisive. And that's a, probably a classical music thing too, because it's like, if you're a studio player, it's like, all right, play it this way, then play it that way.
That's just reminded me, like, I'm so sorry, Benny, I've never responded to your text yesterday. He says, I called Siobhan and told her about how to be decisive.
I did.
Oh, wow. Look at him being so drama queen, good. Texting he, all my friends.
I did.
No, because he was texting me that he was like bouncing the new mix.
No, because I woke up that morning and I realized that. So she's two times brought out things that were very smart that I didn't hear, because one time I erased my own piano part. That was I was telling Corey that I had to re-record my own piano part exactly by listening to it. Yeah, but I didn't notice it until she called me or she messaged me like, you're missing bars. And I'm like, oh, that's why none of that lined up. Oh, I'm missing a lot of stuff. And I tried to go to all my like recent files and it wasn't there. I'm like, I have to do this again.
It's fine. I think that we've adequately bored our audience.
Yeah, this
with
we are off. I'm bored. So let's.
All right. So we'll bring it back to Z.
Was Starset your first touring experience, or was there anything else before?
Yeah, I'm maybe the Femmes of Rock touring, but it was like 10 days. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. That because that kind of makes it real, like, you know, because I'm a gigging musician, but I'm not a touring musician. So there's like a step above, you know, and you know, even if I do it for a full time gig, it's different. What was that like when it became, you know, I'm traveling now, I'm on a bus, I'm on a plane? Like, how did that feel for you?
Yeah, that was definitely a huge adjustment for me, because I've never done touring on the bus. So I had to like kind of get. Hopefully by this tour, I get it right. You know, you're like learning like every tour I go to, like, okay, I got to simplify my life. I don't need this. I don't need that. You know, you don't want all this crap on, you know, touring on the bus, but it was definitely like a huge adjustment for me. You know, sleeping in the bunk is so different than sleeping in my bed, you know, or any bed, you know.
Could you sleep in the bunk? Like, did you find it hard after going on tour? Were you just so beat up? Like, were you staring like at the top of the bunk all night?
That's definitely like a thing that is probably the least favorite thing, being on the tour, sleeping in the bunk, you know? And just the whole daily schedule, was so, you know, different, you know, like you get the showers and like, it's just so different, you know, and it's, and the costumes that we are wearing, the preparation to get into the costumes, you know, like, and those costumes are, the fabric is just so light that you can't put your wireless pegs on your shorts because they will fall. You know? So for me, yeah. So we use three wireless pegs. One is like your in-ear peg, then one is for the mic and one is for DI. So for me, I have to have my two wireless pegs right here. Okay, so it's so weird to play with those pegs, you know? I mean, you don't see them because we are wearing the coat over it, you know? But that's the only place I can really have them. I think Siobhan has them in the bag. You have all of them in the bag. And then one is on my cello. So, you know, wearing those costumes is very different. It's you know, we're exposed a lot, you know, in those costumes. And just being on those risers, you know, and it's just the whole schedule. Like in the morning, like you kind of get up late because, you know, those shows are late. So you get up late, you know, it takes a little while to like, oh my God, where am I? You know, what's my life right now? What's my name, you know? And then you kind of get ready. And then usually we have a sound check for like the VIP acoustic shows. And then you have only like a couple of hours before the big show, and then you have the show. So the schedule is just like, it's like the basically same every day.
Yeah, but so regimented.
It's very weird from what I was used to, you know?
Yeah, and no, I agree. I mean, it's underrated how much extra energy you have to invest in like normal life stuff. Like, how am I going to brush my teeth? I have to use a water bottle because I can't drink the water that's on the bus. And yeah, where am I going to find a shower today? Yeah, and like, how am I going to keep my clothes from like smelling really bad after I sweat in like a hot club? You know, like it's all these things that like in daily life you take for granted, but when you're living in like, yeah, basically a tube with 12 other people, it's very different.
Yeah, exactly. So that was, and like if you would come to my apartment, hopefully one day you guys can, you know, come visit. Everything is perfect here.
Yeah. So you're
darling.
Yeah. Very. What's the word? Like very OCD.
Organized.
Very organized. You know. And then that's not happening on a tour life. That's just not happening.
That brings up a good point. So for our listeners who may or may not ever be on a bus with 12 people touring the country, what are your like top five tips for surviving that situation and maintaining your own sanity and cleanliness? And all the things that we take for granted in our own lives.
Yeah, that is a good question. So, well, I feel like I just gave up on the clean list. No, just kidding. Well, keep your stuff organized. Keep your stuff to minimum. Don't bring, you know, the whole closet on a tour, you know, because like you don't really need it. There's like no fashion statements. You can't really, there's no fashion going on a tour, you know, on the bus. So that would be number one thing. Keep your stuff to minimum, you know. Just simplify your life. I don't know. I don't even know what I would like.
Siobhan, do you have any points?
Yeah. For me, like wet wipes are the most amazing invention ever. Oh, because okay. If you can't have a shower, you should always have wet wipes. Because that's one good way to stay clean. But yeah, I totally agree. Like definitely condense your life because I did the same thing. The first tour, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't condense to one giant suitcase because I need to have outfits. And you realize you're going to wear the same thing every day. You're going to rewear your leggings and wear the same t-shirt and the same whatever.
Right.
Yeah, and then other than that, I mean, I live off Trader Joe's. Any city I'm in, I find where the closest Trader Joe's is and I stock up, and I'm shameless about it. I'm like, I'm going to have all of my food ready because that's the worst. You'll end up being stuck in a city where you can't find something to eat, and like Z's vegan, I'm vegetarian. It can be a huge pain in the ass. So like weird lifestyle things like that. You have to really – it just takes a lot of planning, and it takes a couple of tours to get used to what your rhythm is and staying on a schedule.
Yeah, and get like, for me, you know, I'm in my 40s now, so I definitely feel better now being vegan than 10 years ago. But it is important to be healthy and get strong before you go on a tour like this, because you better be in shape.
Well, what do you do? Okay, so I know this about Siobhan, that like when I've hung out with her, that she works out obnoxiously and that she's always sweating every morning, and that like the way that she looks is because she tries really hard too. Do you girls I know that it's a rigorous thing. Like, listen, I have a bad back, so I work out, walk, bike, like do whatever I have to do every single day just to maintain like normal upright life. What do you girls do? What would you suggest doing as far as working out if you're going on tour and trying to look like you do at 40? Holy fuck.
Isn't it amazing?
Jealous for star set. Just means that you're cryogenically frozen. Trey fucking cool for being your Trey guy.
So we actually did that. We had a pretty good routine. It was actually Siobhan, Ron, and I would get up in the morning and go to gym every morning. We would work out, you know, we would shower, get ready, and then go back. And sometimes we would shop at Trader Joe's, you know, sometimes we got to go to Whole Foods, you know, and we stock up on.
What was Brock doing during this?
Brock was in his underpants, like talking it. Brock was like, oh, maybe I'll go. But Brock's like naturally just skinny, you know? So he's like, I think he doesn't have to worry. Yeah. I mean, I think he wished he went, but you know, he would go every once in a while. Adam would talk about going.
Yeah.
But we got into a good routine. Yeah. We would get up and it's like 10 a.m. It's like, and I tended to be the one that would want to sleep in a little bit later. Like I always like to sleep in until like just about 10. Z was always up super early.
You did so good on this tour. You were like, okay, darling, I'm up. Just give a coffee. I'm up, you know. And then I got home from tour and I was working out. I was like, where are my workout buddies? Like, this is not fun, you know? But yeah, it's good. That's what we do. Like we work out every morning and just, you know, get going in the morning, and it just gives you the energy. And I feel better, like even like mentally. If I would like skip a day, I was like in the bad mood. I was like, oh, I
don't. Yeah, me too.
Well, you're sitting on a bus for so long, and a lot of the time. You know? Well, I was gonna say you're sitting on a bus for so long, and a lot of the times you're just waiting. I mean, like you have to think about the fact that, like, okay, you do this, you have to be here for this, but then you have 2 hours, but then you have to do this, but it's not all at once. So it's one of those things where you can do a routine, but you can also kind of refresh yourself. And you know, you watch so much trash television or sit on a bus all day or whatever, you feel gross. So like when you work out, and you're a guy like Ron, who's fucking huge, like of course that guy goes to the gym every single day. He's a bass player. He has to try so much harder. He looks beautiful underneath that space helmet, and his arms are fucking, like you could tell underneath the spacesuit, that dude's fucking packing some serious fucking guns.
Ron is definitely
photons.
Yeah.
But that was our routine, and
yeah
it takes time to get used to it, but
yeah,
it's good. So anyone listening, or you know, if you're going to go on tour, just write this stuff down. This is important.
Work out. Well, I mean, that's such an important thing. I mean, listen, like,
it helps, and mentally too. You will feel so much better. I'm telling you.
So basically, what you're saying,
I'm just in bad mood.
If I work out, if I don't put total horse shit in my body that's like, you know, completely processed, and I actually like try to clear my mind by getting my heart beating, that like I'll feel better.
You don't put horse shit into your body. Number one.
Well, I don't mean literal horse shit. I mean like monosodium glutamate. I was basically creating a metaphoric thing where I'm really referring to like monosodium glutamate or just normal ascorbic acid and those things that they use to put inside of everything instead of just like, you know, cream.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, that not to change the topic, but all good, interesting information. I have a question for you that I should probably ask to all guests that we have. But, you know, so you're at this point in your trajectory in your career. What is there a particular dream that you have, whether it's outside of Star Set or in music or something completely unrelated, that you want to realize, that's a project that you've wanted to do? Or I'm just curious, like something that you would love to do that you haven't gotten to yet.
I would love to have like a wedding company, not just for like a wedding ceremony music. I don't know if you guys know, but I provide, that's my company. that I provide wedding ceremony music, but I would love to have like the company for all of it. You know, like
production,
entertainment production company.
Yeah.
What do you like about that? Because that's everything I hate about music. it's all the business stuff.
Yeah.
So what
Well, no, I would be just like the owner and the boss, and I would have people working for me.
Oh, right. Okay. just be the boss.
Yeah. But we also call her Ziva. Ziva is her other nickname. So Diva, but with a Z, because she's the queen.
Yeah, Ziva. Diva.
Nice. So you have that. You have that right now. You just want to continue moving forward and building that.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I don't know. I just love the vibe. You know, like I play some weddings, and I just love the vibe. I still get choked up when I hear, you know, them talking about their vows. You know, and it's just flowers, and it's like a fairy tale. You know. So I want to have the company who can create it for couples.
That sounds like a nightmare to me.
No, that's amazing. Good for you. Because it's funny.
And then number two dream is I need a chauffeur. Okay, that's my number two dream. I need to have a chauffeur. You know how I
always totally. Oh, I thought you said chauffeur. Like, give me your credit card. I'll shop for you all
totally
fucking day long.
Unexpected. I didn't
chauffeur.
That's funny.
That's just like on the joke side. But I mean, for real, actually, I want to have a chauffeur. Ask anybody. Like
do you want like a Maybach?
I don't drive on freeways ever.
There's this thing called Uber. It's amazing. It's going to change your life. It's like a chauffeur on demand.
Yeah, but it's nice. I agree. It's nice to have somebody that like knows you and they are into your routines.
Yeah,
like, I get it. I get it.
Hall, like 24/7, you know? So, you know, yeah, it would be nice.
That's an admirable dream. I think you'll get there.
I feel like that's actually quite a conquerable dream. You know what I mean? Because like I see people like we had our guest like Shannon Larkin, and he has a full-time 5-day-a-week pond guy. I'm like, there's a guy that works 5 days a week for you that does ponds. So I can see that like why can't Z from Starset, a completely ubiquitous band that's everywhere, all over the place, not get herself a chauffeur 5 days of the week if she wants to go out 4 days of the week? That's a totally conquerable goal, and I don't think it's unrealistic if you just manifest it.
Yeah, and when your company blows up as well, please hire me.
Okay.
That's amazing. Good for you, though, because like some people, it's funny, depending on what musician you ask, some people just like can't, they don't want anything to do with weddings. They can't stand doing them, you know, and then other people absolutely love it. And then some people hate the administrative stuff. Some people
I can't stand doing
stuff.
Them, but I like paying my bills.
Right.
And I like buying studio gear.
I like being able to make $3,500 in a night to basically play Earth, Wind, and Fire, and then I dance up and down, and the police... Actually, the craziest thing I will say is I did a wedding, and this guy gave me $700 because there was a huge family coup d'etat, but like I brought them together with the Turtles and Dion and the Belmonts, and afterwards, I was like, $700? It was. The guy, the family asked for a prenup 2 days before, and I'm like, what does this dude do that he's so fucking rich that he needs a prenup? And it was a really nice wedding, and all they danced for a long time. Turns out he brought down the mob. He's like one of the most famous lawyers on the planet, and he brought down the mob. But because I'm a DJ, just the dude that knew Dion and the Belmonts, he was like, thank you so much for being so knowledgeable. The mom who wanted the prenup was dancing with the girl who wouldn't take pictures with mom at the beginning when she left on the boat, like they were scowling at each other, but later they were dancing. And this guy's thanking me, not for my talents, not for practicing piano, not for being an engineer, not for anything other than I played Dion and the fucking Belmonts at the right time, and it brought his family together.
What a good story about Ben to end the episode with Zuzana on. Zuzana, thank you so much. Thank you for spending time with us. We'll just have to have you back so we can talk more.
Yeah, can you tell us about your wedding company and anything else you want to promote where we can share
everything.
What you're doing?
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, that's so nice. Okay, so it's the name of the company is Las Vegas Music Oasis. You know, you can check out our website. It's the same, lasvegasmusicoasis.com. And we provide all kinds of ensembles.
One more time, what was it? I think you dropped
it's
out a little bit.
Las Vegas Music Oasis.
Yes.
Correct.
Las Vegas Music Oasis. Yeah. And basically message you for anything at all to do with a wedding in Las Vegas.
Right now, it's the wedding ceremony music. That's the music. Anything about the music.
Yeah, and where can we follow you? She's posting photos on the Instagram, too, like with beautiful, everyone's in beautiful dresses and beautiful music. But yeah, tell everyone where they can follow you.
Yeah, give us the @.
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. It's under the same name, Las Vegas Music Oasis. I post stuff about that on my personal Instagram as well.
And by the way, on behalf of the show, congratulations. I noticed the huge rock on your finger. We know that you just got engaged. We met your wonderful fiance. So congratulations from us. Like, honestly, we're so happy for you. And certainly we want to hear from him sometime. If you come back on the show, you should have him come say hello.
Thank you so much. Yes, I will.
Okay, so with that, you've been 2020. Thanks to Zuzana, my darling Z from Starset, my co-hosts Benny and Corey. This has been an amazing 2 episodes with Zuzana. So check out part 1, part 2. Subscribe at 2020-D.com, and you've been 2020.
Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 93, featuring Dustin Bates of Starset. Check it out.
In general, because of the way that music is consumed now, it is smart to play the single game. And nine times out of ten, if I was in a different band, I would really hone in on that and maximize that to its absolute optimization. But in our band, because of the cinematic, the advantage is when bands are at least trying to do that, we're entirely bucking that trend, and it's focused primarily on the album, and not just like, but you, when you do that, it can't just be like an album with like 3 pretty good songs and then some duds. I have to start 60 songs in some form every album, because I want every song to be super good in at least some way. Maybe it's not a single type of goodness, but for the Starset fan, or you know, various other reasons. But
this is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.